Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to the Sports Across Football Stories podcast. I'm Craig Resnick-Hansen, and today I'm joined by co-host of the Italian Football Podcast, founder of Sempre Inter, and preeminent football journalist Nima Tabalier. Nima gives us a glimpse into his passion and love for Inter Milan, his football origins, and so much more. So sit back, relax, and enjoy our chat with the one and only Nima Tabalier. Hi, Nima. How are you doing on this fine spring morning?
How are you, Craig? It's good to be with you. I'm good.
I'm very well, thank you. We're actually having here in the UK the first bit of non-constant rain, probably for the last week or so. So we're finally coming out of a very long winter. How's it doing over there in Sweden?
It's very, very cold. It's I can't remember an April that was this cold since I was a child. I'm in Gothenburg right now, but in Stockholm they've got actual snow, which is pretty depressing given that it's May soon. That's not normal. But it's very, very cold. It's spring outside. You look outside the window and you kind of see the sun shining and that, but it's not very warm.
Oh, nobody knows what to make of the weather anymore. My wife is German and she told me yesterday that her sister called her and said that it was snowing over there too in southern Germany. In almost May.
Oh, Jesus. Jesus.
What the hell? Anyway, so Nima, you have a fascinating, diverse football story, if I don't say so myself, because, you know, there's a lot of different countries involved there. As we always do with our guests, the number one thing that we're most interested in is, you know, how did your football journey start? How did you fall in love with the game? And tell us a little bit about your background.
Well, I'll start with my background. I was born in Iran, in Tehran, in June 1981. We came to Sweden as refugees in 1984. I was 3 years old. It was my grandmother and my mum and me and I. So to Gothenburg. And that's where I was raised, in Gothenburg. And of course, my football journey, so to speak, began in the, or my interest in football, in the first World Cup I remember was 86 Maradona. I was 5 years old, but I was very, very little. So I wouldn't say that I fully understood what exactly was going on. But I do remember Maradona being unbelievable and watching that goal against England, or that game against England. I remember it very, very vividly. My real first World Cup that I count more as my actual the real first World Cup is Italia 90, and that was kind of interesting how that coincided, because it coincided with 88-89 Inter dei record, Trapattoni's Inter. That was the first football game first club game, that the Italian club game that I saw on TV and was like, You know, that's when I fell hard. I remember in 87 when IFK Gothenburg won the UEFA Cup. They showed those games on TV, and I watched it, and of course, you know, supported them. But it was a, you know, and being from Gothenburg and all of that. So it was I've always been, you know, I have two clubs I support. I don't support any other clubs. I support two clubs. It's IFK Göteborg, IFK Gothenburg, and Inter. And my love story with IFK began in 87. And my love story with Inter began 88, 89, that game against Napoli, the Lothar Matthäus, that Inter, Trapattoni's Inter, record-breaking Inter, meeting Napoli at the San Siro, winning that game, winning goal by Matthäus, 2-1, securing the Scudetto, the Serie A title, against the reigning champions Napoli, against Maradona's Napoli, at a San Siro, who, that was the thing that caught me about Inter. I had never seen football atmosphere like that. It was just on TV, but I'd never seen anything like it. I watched the game at my aunt's house. My aunt at the time was married to a German man who sadly no longer with us. And it was, you know, this was the 80s, so he had a, you know, satellite dish, probably illegally hooked up, because I don't think you were allowed to do that, but he didn't care because he needed to watch his football. So we were watching German TV broadcasting that game, and I was completely mesmerized by the atmosphere, the fans, and the characters on the pitch: Walter Zenga, Bergomi, Riccardo Ferri, Nicola Berti, Andy Bremer, Lothar Matthäus, but Klinsmann came a year after, Serena, Diaz. I mean, all these guys, they were just, you know, it was the character, the charisma, and all of that together. And then at the end, when Inter won that game, and the celebrations, you know, running these what now are iconic images of them running around with the tricolore, with a shield on the pitch with the flag. I mean, it was just it was unlike anything I had ever seen up until that point in my life, and I fell hard. You know, people like say, you know, love, but I really don't think the word love is misused here, because it was love. I fell in love with Inter then, and then I suffered from that moment on, barring a couple of, you know, UEFA Cup trophies in 91, 94, 98, it was pretty much been a suffering as an Inter fan, because, you know, for various reasons, Inter were not very successful and not very well run, until, of course, the, you know, from 2006 onwards, when Inter started racking up Scudetti in the aftermath of the Calciopoli match-fixing scandal, which saw Juventus relegated to Serie B. Or as Eric Tohir, the former Inter owner, said it, together with their, Juventus were relegated to Serie B together with their reputation. Then of course, the treble and all that. And then, of course, I founded Sempre Inter in February 2012, first in Swedish, and then, of course, a few years later in English, because the whole point, my purpose with that, doing that, was to create a platform for Inter fans who were non-Italian speakers. By then I'd learned Italian, because I studied Italian both in sixth formal college, as you call it in the UK, and also after graduation I went to a private university in Florence to study for 6 months to learn more. And of course, every day I, you know, because of the internet, the introduction of the internet and social media and stuff like that, I used to read newspapers, Italian newspapers, every single day after that. So I founded Sempre Inter in February 2012, first in Swedish, and then, of course, we transferred to English, because the goal was to not have to create a platform for Inter fans or non-Italian speakers, to a platform and a community for Inter fans globally, but also, you know, a news outlet that would give them all the information told in a professional way, in a correct journalistic way, to Inter fans all over the world, which I didn't have growing up. I remember saving my weekly allowance, and when I was a kid, and I used to go and buy day-old Gazzetta dello Sport from the newsstand, and used to look at the pictures and dream that one day I would be able to learn Italian, one day I'd be able to visit Gazzetta, visit San Siro, and you know, watching those iconic players, Bergomi, Ferri, etc., etc., and one day, and little did I know that one day I would not only be able to do that, but I'd turn it into a living, and I'd be covering Inter, and I'd be interviewing many of those people. So it is fascinating. When I think about it, I do get a bit, you know, but I don't think about these things too much because I'm too busy just working. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like when you're working with it, you're just focused on doing a good job and being professional. But of course, when I, you know, when I think about it and reflect every now and then, now and again, it is kind of, it's cool.
Well, back in those days when you would have been fantasizing about getting to the San Siro and watching games, I bet you had, well, I wonder if you did maybe have the idea of, you know, being in the stands among the atmosphere with the fans and watching along. Oh, do you get the chance to do that much nowadays, or is it mostly from the press box?
I do it both.
Which do you prefer?
Depends, isn't it? Because on the one hand, just going to a game, and like I did last February with some mates from uni, because I went to university in Wales, and Aberystwyth, and got to know friends for life there, and they're all English, and one of them was a West Ham fan, and he took me to Upton Park because I wanted to go there before they left Upton Park or the Berlin, because you know that was the real West Ham. I mean, it's an iconic club, and so we went there, and then I said, okay, well, I'm going to take you to San Siro before they tear that down. And so we finally got to doing, after pandemics and all that, and, you know, he got married and all that stuff that's happened since we graduated, so we finally got to do that in February, and we had a lovely 4 or 5 days in Milan, and we so that was wonderful because it was their first time at the San Siro, it was their first Milan derby, and so on and so forth. So that was brilliant. But at the same time, I can't help but, you know, when you're working with it, you also think, well, I can, you know, because it's like two sides inside me at the same time, if that makes sense. Because on the one hand, I just, you know, I love just standing there watching the game, not having to focus and concentrate on anything else other than watch the game. But at the same time, I'm thinking, well, actually, you know, this, you know, it's there's also this kind of thing with work where you're like, well, you know, I want to do this, and you think of this angle, and do you know what I mean? It's very, I can't choose between them, but it's more relaxing to be a fan than it is to work with it, for sure.
And what would you mention, that the really long history that you've got with the club and the different eras that you've seen it go through, would you say that the club is enjoying one of its better periods right now under Inzaghi, or does it still pale in comparison to some of those decades of the past that you've seen?
I'd say we're in the middle of a winning cycle, which Suning created. I mean, it's been some really turbulent years. You know, the pandemic and the financial meltdown that caused, especially in Italian football. I mean, there was Inter were in trouble, but they handled it absolutely brilliantly. They handled it by taking two steps back and three steps forward. And now Inter are in a fantastic position financially. And also the technical project, as you know, term they use in Italy, the football project, is looking better than it's done since Mourinho was there, if we're perfectly honest, because you've got a coach who, unlike Mourinho and unlike Conte, actually wants to stay there. He's happy where he is. He plays a football who the players love. It's a very modern, progressive football. It's a very difficult football, brand of football. It's technically and tactically very demanding. But he's made it work, and he's made it work under severe financial restrictions. You know, his first summer, they turned a net profit from the transfer window of 140 million euros. The second season, they turned a net profit of 60 million Euros. And last summer, the first summer where he didn't have to turn a profit, they still turned a profit, but it wasn't by a lot. He finally got to keep what he wanted to keep, and he got to strengthen the first team. They made mistakes in terms of rotation players. But now, you know, these 3 years, you're looking at six trophies. In the middle of all that, you've got one Serie A title, three Supercoppa, two Coppa Italias, and a Champions League final on top of that. Now, when you're going through a financial, you know, when you're going through financial purgatory, the way that Inter have done, usually success is not what is expected from you. That kind of success, at least, is not very common. But it has been made common because of the fantastic leadership of Beppe Marotta and the directors at the club, but also Simone Inzaghi, who it's very obvious where he has learnt his coaching and his man management skills. It is completely reminiscent of Sven-Goran Eriksson for me. You know, Sven-Goran Eriksson is someone who he knew, and that's what he did with IFK Gothenburg in 82 when they won the treble, they won the UEFA Cup, Swedish Cup, Swedish League, was exactly that. Building a team, building a unit, but doing it with respect, not by humiliating the football players, not by yelling at them, not by being a drill sergeant like Conte was or is, but by being more a human person. And that's something that Inter's players in interviews have all kind of touched on, saying, well, Inzaghi sees the person. That's all Sven. He learned that from Sven-Goran Eriksson. That was his leadership style. And I think that is, to me, the most impressive thing, this notion of leadership by consent as opposed to leadership by management by fear, and which is more stable. Well, management by consent is more difficult to attain, but it's far more stable than management by fear, which you can achieve quicker, but is not as stable because people don't like being treated like plebs and idiots and being yelled at and humiliated.
Yeah, and I think that's why managers like Conte and Mourinho always have a good couple of years and then it drops off, right?
Yeah, it is. I mean, that is part of it. Discipline, you can still have discipline, you can still have organization, you can still have all of those things, but if you need to also have some sort of a basic human level of respect, Inzaghi has that in a modern form. And that's all from Sven-Göran Eriksson, who is someone who, well, he is a hero in Sweden, but particularly in Gothenburg.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Well, we've touched on Inzaghi there and the impact he's had. I mean, I heard the other day that the club underwent, as you mentioned, a net profit in the transfer market, which was equal to the net loss that they made under Conte. So he's literally reversed the financial situation from a huge loss to a huge profit while, you know, achieving arguably more, if not at least the same, success. But how do you see things progressing under Inzaghi next season? Have they reached a ceiling, or can they... What's the next goal, do you think, for the club?
Sporting wise, I think it's obvious without them saying it, and they are far too smart to say than to say something like that. But I think it's fairly obvious that they want to win the Champions League. I think the fact that they got to the final and that they were that close as they were in that final, and then since then have improved, and you know, losing on penalties to Atletico the way they did, I think they're very clear on what the problem is, and why they didn't succeed. And they think that, well, we look at the key players in the squad, they're all in a perfect age. None of them is that old. In fact, most of them are hitting their peak. What we need is depth. And they kind of addressed that, or are addressing that in the summer. And they've all kind of confirmed it since. Auxilio, the sporting director, Marotta, the sporting CEO, Zhang, the owner, the president, they've all said it, that it's not going to be a revolution, but we're going to tweak. We're going to, you know, find specific areas where we can strengthen, and we're going to strengthen. They believe in the group. They believe in the coach. They believe in their project. And there's going to be tweaks needed to be made. There's going to be, because I mean, when Simone Inzaghi was appointed, he wasn't a finished coach. He's still learning on the job. You know, he's 47, 48 years old, despite having coached Serie A clubs for 8.5 years, 5.5 at Lazio, and now 3 years at Inter. So he is still learning on the job, but that's exactly it. They all, the feeling you get is that they're all learning together, they're improving together, they're growing together. And that's why it's become a very, very good environment for players to improve. And a lot of people say, well, how is it possible that Inter get these players? Like, you know, they find this right mix of free transfers, old and young, and they get the most out of them, and everyone wants to succeed. Well, it's about creating an environment where people want to get their, you know, where you can express yourself at the, you know, in the best way possible. That's what they've created, which I think is fantastic. It's a fantastic thing that Marotta, Inzaghi, Auxilio, the technical staff, the directors all have done together. And that's a unique thing that they've done. The way they handle crises, the way they handle, the way they approach everything on and off the pitch, with seriousness, respect for one another, and building a group and a unit. And the dynamic surrounding that, it's very impressive. It's very, very impressive. But of course, Simone Inzaghi, for me, is the key there. I mean, back in 2017, after having watched him for about two seasons at Lazio, I penned a column in the now defunct Calcio Mercato's English page named "Why Simone Inzaghi is the Next Italian Supercoach After Antonio Conte and Max Allegri." And I think since then, I was hoping that he would come to Inter because of his ability to develop young players. I mean, so many young players that have exploded under him, such as, you know, Sergei Milinkovic-Savic being a fantastic example of that. And also Di Marco and many others. But also his ability to get out of players who are older, maybe, and have somehow never really peaked. Perisic was never better under Inzaghi than under Inzaghi. Çalhanoğlu turned into a world-class midfielder under Inzaghi. Lautaro Martinez has become a goal scorer who's yet to fully peak under Inzaghi. Marcus Thuram has never played this well until he played under, you know, Simone Inzaghi, and so on. I can, you know, countless others. That is what's unique about him. He did the same thing at Lazio. Ciro Immobile became the European Golden Shoe winner under Inzaghi. He was never that prolific until he worked with Simone Inzaghi. You know, his way of viewing football and his way of creating a system where you get the best out of all the players that are available to you, and building a group is truly unique. And I think he is the embodiment of the modern coach, what a modern coach needs to be. I don't think, I honestly think that Mourinho's downfall is in large part due to his inability to communicate properly with the generation that came after the John Terry's, the Zlatan Ibrahimovic, the Michael Essien's, the Didier Drogba's. the Paul Pogba generation and younger, he just doesn't know how to communicate with them. And we already saw signs of this when he was at Inter, the problems he had with Mario Balotelli. They just did not understand each other. And Mourinho, I remember vividly saying at the time, I've tried everything. I've tried being angry. I've tried being kind. Yeah. I've tried being understanding. I cannot reach him. And I think when you have a group of people, regardless of football or whatever context it is, communication is key. If the people involved can't communicate, things will never work. And I don't think he can. I think his biggest problem is that he can't communicate with this new generation. Whilst Inzaghi has a fantastic ability to communicate with everyone, and to build a relationship and make everyone feel involved, the same way Mourinho did. But with the older generation, because I think it can't be underestimated how, you know, generations differ, people differ, and communication changes through the ages, and some generations don't like they don't respond to how previous generations have responded to being communicated with, and I think, you know, Inzaghi is a modern guy in that sense, and also that he was a footballer himself. He was a striker for Lazio, played for the national team, played I think 20 minutes with his more famous brother Filippo Inzaghi for the Italian national team. I really think he's the key, and he's also a kind of person who doesn't change the tone of his voice when he wins or loses. He's not that guy. And Sven is, again, exactly like that. His tone of voice doesn't change whether he's winning or losing. What you see is what you get. It's a very humble, down-to-earth approach. And I think people respect that. I think people respond to that. And I think that's how he's managed to, despite last season, 12 defeats in the Serie A and people yelling at him and demanding that he resign and insulting him. He didn't say anything. He was quiet. And I remember the game against Spezia away when Inter lost. You know, they were all standing there listening to the fans and the ultras yell at them. And it didn't look very good, but he demanded that the players stand there and take responsibility and listen to the fans. Don't argue, applaud them, respect them, listen to them, but of course, know your role. Their roles are to be fans. Your role is to be a player. So, and you have to act accordingly. Everyone has to know their roles and respect them. And I think people respond to that, Craig. I think people respect that. And because when he, a few months later, went to the final of the Champions League, beating Milan in the semi-finals, he was still the humble person. He was still the same person. He didn't change. And I think people respect that deeper than they do if someone is a bit more like Mourinho and Conte, who are, you know, very superstar, Hollywood, larger than life, flamboyant characters who the media loves. But I think when you're building a relationship with people, I think the Inzaghi approach is more... it stands the test of time and it's more durable.
Yeah, it makes all the sense in the world. I think it's, like we said before, I think that those sort of more bombastic coaches, they tend to have a shorter cycle and it tends to blow up a little bit quicker. Not always, but a lot of the time. But I just want to take a quick detour from Inter, because as an Iranian-born Swede who is obsessed with Italian football, where do your allegiances lie when it comes to the international game, when it comes time for the World Cup?
It's primarily Iran and then secondarily in Italy.
Ah, that's interesting.
Italy, as I said, my first World Cup that I consider to be my really first World Cup is Italia 90. I mean, those images of a packed Stadio Olimpico, the opening games against Czechoslovakia, the United States, Austria. It was, I've never seen anything like it. I mean, it was exactly like watching Inter a year earlier. I've never seen anything like it. It spoke to me in a way that was, it just knocked me out. It was love. Again, love. It was literally was love. I fell in love with Italian football the same way I fell in love with Inter. And that's why when I love Inter, but when I cover Italian football, when I talk about when I find these fascinating stories of Pantaleo Corvino from Lecce, being the sporting director at Lecce, building what he's done there, is to me a fascinating story. Same thing, Pier Paolo Marino, who was one of the greatest sporting directors ever, and his journey with Napoli through the ages, and potentially now rumors saying he might return there. We don't know if that's true or not, but if he were, it's an unbelievable story. The stories of in Sicily, what, you know, Catania, the Catania under Pulvirenti and Lo Monaco, when they came up to the Serie A, you know, Zamparini and Palermo, there's so many stories. Sean Soliano, another sporting director, who's working wonders. I mean, who has worked wonders and is still doing so. It's Hellas. I mean, it's just, you know, you can go on forever with talking about, you know, these characters, these stories. That's the aspect. Those are the aspects of Italian football that I'm absolutely head over heels in love with, you know, because Italy's only been a country for about 160 years. Every region is essentially its own kind of country with its own kind of history and pride and dialects of Italian, which are almost their own languages, and you have to kind of, in order to understand that, you have to kind of know. And put yourself, in my opinion at least, you have to kind of go into it. You have to really dedicate yourself to understanding the history, the culture, the regional differences. And that expresses, those regional differences express themselves in food, in history, in music, in literature, in art, in architecture, and in football. And that is what I am in love with. And that all started in Rome in the summer of 1990.
Last one, Nima, and it's a hard one. Well, it could. Some people find it hard, some people find it easy, but what has been your favourite moment watching Inter?
Look, nothing can beat the unrivaled, unbridled joy and euphoria of these Champions League semi-final in 2010 against Barcelona, with everything that entailed. It was the culmination of Interismo, that game. Everything that is Inter, the old Inter, not because this is a new Inter, but the Inter that I grew up with, the contro tutto e tutti, us against everything and everyone. Everyone trying to stop us, from the Italian establishment, the European establishment, this kind of everyone against us. Everyone wanted Barcelona to win. Everyone wanted Inter to fail. That was kind of, it just manifested itself in Mourinho. And he was so smart that he knew how to channel that onto the pitch, with Ibrahimovic expressly leaving Inter in the summer preceding that to win the Champions League, to go to Barcelona, and for Inter to do what they did at the San Siro and then go to Camp Nou, get a player sent off for, you know, Busquets pretending to get hit in the face. There was no VAR at the time. And, you know, all of that, and to lose but win. Inter won the treble then and there. That feeling will never be rivaled. Equally, the most emotional experience I've had at San Siro was last April, May, when I was there at the return leg in the semi-final of the Champions League against Milan, where Inter was, you know, Simone Inzaghi's Inter leveled the score with Milan, in the sense that one, a part of leveling the score with Milan, you know, Inter having lost two Euro derbies, as they call it in Italy, the derbies in the Champions League, to Milan. But this time around, there was no doubt Inter won that, and they won it without conceding a goal, and leveled, you know, gave them payback essentially. And standing there at the final whistle, the atmosphere, I mean, I've been lucky enough to be there and watch, I think, 10 derbies or something like that. But I've never experienced anything like that, the atmosphere there, the Euro Derby, that return leg. It was, words fail me. And the final whistle, when Lautaro scores that goal, the final whistle, and the incredible release of emotions afterwards, there's nothing like it. I really can't express that. Those two moments are, for me, even though they weren't finals, those two moments really stand out in my mind.
Nima, I can feel, and I'm sure the listeners will, the passion like dripping from my earbuds right now. I feel like it's rare that we have a guest so passionate about their club, and it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you, and I hope we can do it again sometime.
Whenever you want, Craig. It's been a pleasure talking to you, and thank you for inviting me.
Thanks so much, Nima. Have a great day.
You too.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the Sportacost Football Stories podcast. It was an absolute pleasure talking to Nima, and we can't wait to bring you more chats with fans from across the footballing landscape, from ex-pros to bloggers, YouTubers, journalists, and much more. If you've enjoyed this episode, please consider subscribing. If you really liked it, give us a 5-star review wherever you get your pods. That will help us out so much. Thanks again, and catch you next time on the Sportacost Football Stories podcast.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kid's PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.